Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Carolina Connections, the radio show where business leaders connect.
Hi, this is Larry Stefan from the Wireless Research Center of North Carolina here in Wake Forest. I am stepping in for our regular host, Ann Reveal, who has not able to make it today. And we're going to continue our series on the device network and applications for the Internet of Things. So we've been doing a series of shows breaking down the Internet of Things and how we have different value propositions through the discussions. Our initial shows on devices, now we've done networks, and now we're doing applications. So we have David here, who is from Brightwolf, and David will talk a little bit about himself, please, and tell us a little bit about Brightwolf as we go around the room.
Hi, my name is David Houghton, and I'm a director with Brightwolf. Brightwolf is a company that's focused on specifically the M2M IoT connected system space. So there's a lot of acronyms in there, but it's really the next generation of automation, where we're able to begin to connect to devices and things that are out in the perimeter, what we'd like to refer to as capturing real-world data. And our particular focus is the software that allows that to occur and then feed that back in a real-time fashion, connecting back to an enterprise systems. And if you think about it in terms of sense and respond, that's what we try to provide. And we think there's significant growth opportunities here, and we believe we're well positioned to help people accelerate the time to market in that regard.
Mark?
Hey, thanks. Mark Schroline with Verizon Wireless. My role is a solution architect. So at Verizon Wireless, a lot of folks think about buying cell phones and maybe smartphones or a jetpack. But we do a lot of connected solutions that basically use IP connectivity to bring together those devices in the field, the sensors in the field, and be able to move that data back to an enterprise class application server. So our goal is to move that data and make these IoT, our Internet of Things solutions, work.
Jerry, our partner in crime at the Wireless Research Center.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Yeah, we're here, Jerry Hayes, the Wireless Research Center. We're mapping the wireless DNA or genome with our partners from Verizon. Here at the Wireless Center, we handle everything from products through applications. So it fits very well into our ecosystem, and we're glad to be here. Thanks, Larry.
So, David, a lot of us have our own particular perception of Internet of Things. A lot of us are focused on devices. You know, this is a widget or an embedded system, as we call it in the industry, a connected device and so forth. A lot of us are focused on the big network. You know, how do we deliver all this communications? But today we're going to talk about applications and why is that unique, and do people understand the transition of an application from a wired application to a wireless application, and how does the Brightwolf address that specifically, or how can you maybe at least level the playing field from a discussion so everybody can understand what we're talking about?
Interesting setup. If you think about M2M and connected systems that everyone's talking about, the Internet of Things, it's really just the next generation of automation. So quite often, connecting with devices out in the perimeter have been things that have been done manually. And with the advent of the recent technologies around cloud, the speeds with wireless technologies, and in fact, even remote power, it allows the opportunity to begin to talk to these things, in some cases in real time. And so if you can start to capture that information in real time, you can then do analysis on it and then affect what you do with it. So essentially you can capture information, analyze it, and then report back on what you want to do, whether it's an alert or actually an action. And so the ability to automate that is where Brightwolf plays, and that's what's creating this new opportunity in this space, because it presents not just chances for efficiencies and smoother operations, but it also a chance to change business models. So if you're capturing information in a fleet management and you're improving the efficiency of your truck through route optimization, Well, the other thing, the other benefit of that is the fact you also have a chance to improve safety profiles. And that may present an opportunity to talk to your insurance company that says, if I'm starting to do this, would that then affect my rates? And there's a chance for me to share data with you and prove that, in fact, we are improving, and therefore, can we see some reduced rates? Insurance companies see that opportunity and are willing to partner with companies. And so now you have pieces of data that are associated with the operations of a fleet out on the perimeter, coming back in a central fashion, tying it to yet another vendor of theirs, and essentially expanding the value chain. And BrightWolf has a lot of experience in doing this. In fact, the software was born years ago and has grown up based on working on embedded devices out of the perimeter. And we've now expanded that, moved that capability all the way through to the cloud. And so we believe we have a unique offering that says, hey, you can have a single source of code that spans the entire implementation. And we have a tremendous amount of experience in that space. So we think that would help accelerate, if you will, development in these areas.
Thank you, David. Mark, give us a little bit of your insight from the Verizon perspective of how they look at the application side of that.
Sure.
Space.
So, the DNA is kind of the overarching view that we look at. And the network, of course, is the Verizon part of that equation, just creating secure tunnels, being able to creatively move data. It's all based on TCP/IP. But we've actually expanded quite a bit. We purchased Terramark, a cloud provider, because when we look at the A part of that equation, the application server, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at that whole Internet of Things. So sometimes the application server might be an app that's running on a handset, and it's controlling a device that's in your home, and there's no external connection. That's one conceivable way that a personal area network might be working in that Internet of Things. But generally, when we see that a company is connecting devices that are remotely located, they're using a cellular connection for that connectivity, they're going to move that data not directly to an end user's handset or an end user's computer, but they're going to usually put that data in some kind of cloud service. And the reason they use a cloud service is a cloud service can have massive redundant internet connections, redundant electrical power. It's less expensive to provide backup for many organizations like a cloud service does, so that you have the high reliability. You don't miss collecting data points because your server's down. And then all of the dashboards and all of the smarts and all of the alerts are actually generated not by that piece of equipment out in the field, but by that cloud service itself, which again gives you centralized connectivity, centralized management, and the ability to be able to package and repackage that data any way you need to. You may present some of it to one set of customers and repackage some of it to another set of customers because the data is all there for you on that cloud service.
And the analytical power resides in the cloud service.
Exactly right. So you may get a great dashboard on your smartphone, but it's based on the information that's stored in the cloud about your historical data from your run and your historical data from your heart rate and all the different sensors you're wearing. Over time, the time data is stored in that cloud service for you to access.
Excellent.
Yep.
So, Mark, real quick, I know that Verizon is very focused on certifying devices before they go on the network. Mm-hmm. Are there any controls in place in terms of what data goes on the network, what applications go on the network? Is that basically left for the market to determine the rules and regulation of that?
So right now, the marketplace is generally determined by the size of and cost of data plans. So for instance, 24/7 streaming HD video is unaffordable at this time. It's not a solution that Verizon's looking to implement on a cellular connection. So other types of usages that would generate that much data negatively impact our network. And several users on one tower would make it so that other users on that tower would be adversely affected. But otherwise, as far as types of data, it's not quite like the Apple Store where Apple controls apps and which applications can and can't work and which APIs can touch the operating system. We don't control the data network to that extent. So essentially, most IP connections are allowable, and we have ways to offer additional layers of security. So public IP addresses, static IP addresses, private IP addresses, almost like a VLAN inside Verizon. All of those are things that we can do to help move your customers' data securely and reliably.
So the limitation is just quality of service, that you make sure that you maintain quality of service for the rest of your customers.
Well, that's exactly correct. So you may have heard that we've got the LTE network and now our new XLTE network with additional capacity. So right now, people may see speeds going through the roof of 30 and 40 megabit. And that's great that they get that today, but our goal is to continuously provide 5 to 12 megabits download and 3 to 5 upload and provide additional capacity and be able to continue to reach those service levels. So anything beyond that is...
I see David over here reaching for the microphone. I know he has an exciting point to make.
Exciting.
David, what?
Put your seatbelts on.
Tell us what excites you about this space. And
Just one point I want to make is Mark articulated some interesting challenges. And although the capabilities may exist in terms of the network and the speeds and feeds, some of the challenges are you can't... The cost justification or the business case associated with rolling out a connected system may suggest that I've got to figure out how to minimize my network cost. And so you may look to provide more intelligence out at the end and perhaps capture that cost or figure out a reduced cost in terms of a more intelligent device. And then you're only batching the information as appropriate when necessary. And so there's lots of implementations. And it's not unlike the way computing's involved, right? There's the centralized computing where it could be simply based on the cloud, and you have a relatively dumb device out there sending information, to a three-tier architecture, right, or client-server, where you've got a relatively smart device talking to a data aggregator that's ultimately then talking up to the cloud. And so there's lots of dimensions to this, and they all have to factor into the pricing in terms of the rollout schedule, in terms of the state of the technology. It's exciting, it's complex, and it takes a lot of experience to make sure you get this right.
So when you see a customer that has been trying to do this and actually develop their own application, and they come to you, how do you transition them from what they've been trying to do in-house to using a professional service provider as yourself? And from the same topic, think about this, and maybe this is the entire point of the conversation here for the series. It's important to work with people who have done some of this before. The people have lived through some of these growing pains, whether it's the device side, the network side, or the application side. So I know a lot of people think that there are small bits and pieces to put all this together, but the complexity of putting these pieces together is much broader and constantly evolving. So it's not a hard target that you can focus on, but it's a soft target that moves all the time. And the experts like Brightwolf are part of this solution. So tell us how you can help the solution.
That's a great question. The dimensions associated with doing a connected system are not trivial. We've all heard about the simplicity of a connected system that says, hey, I'm going to get this little app that I download on my phone, and I'm going to connect to my light bulb, and I'm going to turn it on and off. And this isn't that hard. So why is it so hard? We want to scale it up. Well, the reality is it does get difficult. There's three things when people talk about big data, the three V's as they're referred to. So you have volume. Just simply volumes of data. So depending on how many devices you have out there and how much information you're bringing in, it could quickly, as Mark mentioned, strap a network. At the same time, there's disk at the back end that's got to be holding that thing, holding that data. So that's a big challenge. Then you have the variety of data. So now you have devices. It's not just one device, but multiple devices. So they're sending different types of data. So the variety of data makes it complex. So whatever's receiving it has to be able to normalize that data, perhaps in a real-time fashion, and then make judgment calls in terms of how it's integrated and the responses associated with it. And then lastly, there's volume, variety.
Volume, variety, and the other V.
The other V, so I'm drawing a blank now. Volume, variety, and velocity. I'm sorry, velocity.
I almost called you Governor Perry.
That's beautiful. That's just beautiful. It's velocity. And so,
well, you got it, man. You got it.
This data can come in a batch. This data can come in small snippets, but it also can come in real-time fashion.
Right.
And depending on what your demands are, very simply, connecting to a light bulb and turning it on and off is one aspect. But if you flip the pendulum all the way to the other side and think about a nuclear power plant where it's real-time data they're monitoring and they've got to be ready to go fast, there's lots of information coming very fast. And so the spectrum of challenges associated with rolling out a connected system mean understanding every dimension of that. And that experience comes with putting years and years into this space, because each component of it, plays a very vital role, and you have to understand the scalability and how you're going to prepare for that down the road. And that affects you at the application level, at the connectivity level, at the database level, at the application level. And it's important to put all those pieces in place to ensure they're congruent in terms of how do you want to roll that system out. From a Brightwolf perspective, if somebody is already dabbling in this space and having some challenges, we would probably do an assessment in terms of where they are, where they're running into challenges, and then use that as a plan forward. But most often what we're finding is folks are rather thinking about getting into this space, but don't necessarily understand where to start. And we bring a platform to the table, and it's the platform that essentially puts the connected systems plumbing in place, mapped nicely into a Verizon network. And that platform then allows us to create the application on top, as opposed to creating all the components in place. We have a unique platform designed for connected systems, and it has that built-in scalability. So that's what allows us to accelerate time to market in terms of applications. The key then is making sure you have a business case that supports it, you know, where you're placing your bets in terms of investments. And then you see where your heavy costs are, whether it's going to be the network, whether it's going to be the devices you roll out, whether it's the rollout schedule in general. Rolling out fleets of trucks with connected systems doesn't happen overnight. You've got to begin to implement this and actually install these on each of the trucks. That takes a while, and there's a heavy cost associated with it. So the payback may not come for months, years for that matter. So it's important to understand all those dimensions. That's what we'd like to bring to the table.
Hey, Mark, do you have a good story that you could share from one of your customers?
Sure. We've got a customer that they actually had a they're a meatpacking company. They had most of their meat was stored in large walk-in refrigerators. Some of it, because they had some overflow, was actually stored in refrigerated trucks on site. So we actually implemented a solution to help them with some reefer truck monitoring. So they got a couple of several different advantages. First off, for the stationary refrigerators, they put in some inexpensive solutions that had multiple temperature sensors that talked to one gateway. So that saved them some money by only having one cellular connection. All of those sensors talk to a cloud service, and that cloud service on the weekend or 24 hours a day can notify someone if it detects that power is not being applied to the compressor, if it detects that the temperature is rising, for instance, maybe a door was left open. If it detects any number of anomalies, it knows what to do. It can reach out and alert somebody. Now, what they used to do was they paid a guy to go out there several times a day, 24 hours a day, and check the trucks. So that guy, I'm sure, has a much higher quality of life, and I'm sure they didn't fire him. They just found other things for him to do. They actually have information now that they can show the USDA and other inspection agencies that they've maintained proper refrigeration in all their cooler units. And also, they told us the value of the meat in those coolers could vary from $100,000 to $250,000. So preventing that loss one time paid for the entire solution many, many times over. So that's an example of where someone saw a need for that kind of remote application. It's the application that does all the work, the alerting, the historical data. The sensors were fairly straightforward. They're inexpensive. The remote connectivity was just a matter of paying a cell phone bill and lighting up another device with a very low, small data plan. And I think it's costing the company dozens of dollars a month to be able to provide this this kind of solution for them with a pretty low capital investment. So the partner is the one that brought together the solutions, the connectivity, and had that application server on the back end that does all the heavy lifting and keeps the historical data and does the alerting and the charts and graphs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to see how you optimize where the intelligence of the network goes, you know, on which, if it's on the device on the front end or in the middle or in the back end, right? You can tailor that at Brightwolf. You can tailor that for the specific application. You know, and Verizon can guarantee the network.
Sure, we've got some partners that instead of having a fairly inexpensive, a dumb device at the edge, may invest in a programmable logic controller, a PLC, or kind of a small industrial computer. And that computer at the edge may make some of those decisions. If it gets too hot, turn on the fan and let the application server know that I turned on the fan so somebody can see, you know, exactly what the issue is. So that's a great point. There's lots of different ways to do it. You can put the intelligence at the edge. You can put the intelligence in the middle. Partners like Verizon and Brightwolf can help you make that decision as to which is going to be the most cost-effective, logical, and quickest to market and provide the best ROI when you, as a provider, are trying to decide which of those methodologies is going to be best for you.
Folks who haven't dipped their toe in yet may not appreciate the advances in technology. So as Mark was articulating how some of these intelligent devices can sit at the perimeter, the size of these sensors and the size of the CPU and the memory and the devices that ultimately fit into a device are so small that many things are feasible today that nobody could conceive of even five years ago. And that's what's allowing this to begin to happen, that you realize, wow, it's not that expensive, and there's tremendous intelligence I can put out at that perimeter.
So, for instance, there is a medicine bottle cap that fits on a regular medicine bottle that tells the doctor whether you're opening it on time and taking your medicine on time. That's the size of a connected device. That one, if I'm not mistaken, is cellular, as a matter of fact. So,
yeah, the fact there are socks that people wear, and there are sensors in the socks that can measure their cadence in terms of how they're walking and their balance, and provides feedback to a doctor that says, this person isn't or is exercising or is following the program, but also we can also do predictive analytics in terms of the data that's coming back and get a feel for, are they maintaining, are they improving, are they degrading?
And that's really what the key is. We can do all kinds of cool sensors, but why? What's in it for the customer? What's in it for the company? And there's always some kind of financial sense that's going to make, you know, the having that data either make your product more valuable or allow you to bring a product to market that could never exist in the past. So being able to predict if your nurses are overexerting themselves by moving around too much during the day, you know, that's something that helps you avoid liability. There's a financial incentive to having that information. And that's something you really couldn't have gotten before in a survey.
Jerry, we see a lot of product coming into the Wireless Center for certification. But how often do we see that the challenge to complete that product to market is actually the validation or the completion of the application?
Very often it's, for us, it's checking out the hardware, making sure that that's communicating as correctly and efficiently as possible. And then the next step is seeing if it's making that connection over the network and getting the data where it needs to go.
So one of my expressions in life, when I use it over and over again, is that successful business is always about the experience. And what everybody's been talking about is really the improved quality of experience for the customer. You know, nobody has to walk out to a trailer at 2 o'clock at night or, you know, leave an office event that he's doing to make sure that this is working. All this can be automated. I think David's point was it's all about automation. But at the end of the day, this is make either the employee's experience better or customer experience much better. The other point I wanted to make, and jump on this if you want, I always visualize when people do Internet of Things devices and they try to do it homegrown. The visualization that comes to me is a guy who just finished painting that floor and he's in a corner, has no way out. So I just, because they just haven't planned properly for all the moving part and data. And I went into a home automation space and energy space one of my previous lives, and managing the data and how it grows and how it scales and what a beast it becomes is something that is never understood until you live the management of data. So, Dave, maybe you can jump on that.
That's a phenomenal point. The other thing worth noting is, although the technology is here, there are no real industry standards. And so there's tremendous amounts of technology that are coming, playing by their own rules. It's very unlikely we're going to see industry standards, frankly. Technology has a history of that. There will be coalitions who try to drive standards, but right now there really are none. I think we can expect to see standards perhaps in particular disciplines or particular industries that people may adopt, but the lack of standards makes it highly complex, right? So you're capturing devices or a device with some sensors, and you pull those sensors out, and those sensors don't behave nicely with other sensors. So now I've got to pull that information together. Real time, I've got to normalize it, then begin to do the analytics on it, and then make the judgment call on what happens next in terms of the alerts or the action. It's not trivial, but no question the value propositions exist virtually across all industries.
So being able to standardize the format of the data coming from the different sensors, that's where it's going, or you'd like it to go? Is that...
Ideally it would go, but I don't see that happening right in the near future, certainly, and that makes it a real challenge for people.
So there are, as you point out, certain industries where standards either exist or are being developed. For instance, healthcare, there's going to be essentially probably a standard where everyone knows what HIPAA compliance means. Right now, you can look it up, and everyone's got a different translation, but I think there'll be not only a standard understanding of what it means to be compliant, but I think the components, the protocols, and the parts that help those systems communicate are becoming standardized even as we speak, because I think industries and businesses see that they aren't going to be able to survive without that standardization.
That's right. And I imagine as like analytics become more commercialized too, they would want the data to be more standardized.
All right, because as it stands right now, if my data and your data in two different hospitals is not compatible, that's great. It's good for me and good for you. But when the feds want to come in and look at an aggregate of everyone's data and make a meta-analysis,
right,
then having those standards built in is going to make that solution a lot simpler, a lot more straightforward.
I think another issue people need to think about is, although you're capturing this information today, you have to make sure you're putting some type of system in place that's future resistant. And so the data model you're deciding upon today has to be able to support some of the needs down the road when we have this plethora of information. I want to begin to analyze it. That data has to be functional for me to use. If I can't get access to it or I can't translate it, that's a real problem. And so having some type of data model that allows you to make sure you're future-proof down the road is going to be fundamentally important.
But if the data is not properly structured, or the database is not the correct database tools are not properly selected, what happens quickly is that the cost of data goes very, very high. What happens quickly is the customer experience becomes very negative. And then you have an environment in which nothing's happening as planned. And now what happens is the customer has to go back to the beginning of the project, restart the project, because the architecture, the platform, the tools he put in place are not the right platforms for him to be successful long-term or even near-term. So again, I'm going to make the pitch one more time. Professionals have gone through this over and over again and understand some of these challenges, and it's important that you bring the right professionals on board. Not only because it's necessarily large players in the game, but it's also because there's a lot of innovation in the game. This is constant innovation to make sure that people are doing things as smart as possible and as fast as possible. And again, it is about ROI, but it's always about the experience. So I don't know, Dave, you want to give us a little feedback on that?
I think people need to understand that the vision they have for what they're trying to solve for today needs to consider tomorrow, and it's difficult to do that. Many people are putting connected systems out there, and these systems have to have a lifetime of 10, 15, 20 years. And so if that's the case, how are you going to ensure that device that I'm not going to be able to touch unless there's a malfunction, right? But I can't afford to go out and touch all these devices. How am I going to make sure that I future-proof that to position myself for the future as I've got begin to roll it up and combine it with other big data? Those challenges only come with people who've had experience in this space.
Actually, just raised an interesting observation is remote management of the devices. How important is that?
That's absolutely critical. Generally, when we roll out a solution like this, one of the goals is to eliminate truck rolls. The value is, to a great extent, to eliminate a truck roll to go read or monitor or adjust, you know, something that's out there. So if we reduce the number of truck rolls, certainly we've come close to our goal, but eliminating those truck rolls means not having to go out there to fix your remote connectivity device either. So that remote management, centrally managed monitoring and management are absolutely critical to the success of being able to future-proof that investment. Some of the other things that are out there, I think, that regard future-proofing is, again, not trying to reinvent the wheel, working with, for instance, your carrier to choose hardware and network connectivity and technology that's going to be around in the planned lifetime of your product. Even to the extent of choosing, for instance, a device that can survive the temperatures of the environment you're going to put in, or a rugged hardened SIM. If you weren't in that environment, you wouldn't know that there's a hardened SIM versus a consumer-grade SIM. So those kinds of things, you need guidance from professionals to be able to help, both on the hardware side and the software solution.
Just the 2G situation.
Exactly. A great example, exactly what I was referring to, right? Being able to, every carrier is going to sunset networks. So the plan is to understand the lifetime of the intended network technology you intend to use to decide if it makes proper ROI to use a inexpensive technology that's available today, or to go ahead and spend money on a future technology that's going to future-proof the life of your product for another generation.
I think the thing that's really interesting to consider is the fact that we're talking about a connected system, and it's a simple system. I shouldn't say that. It's a system. It has a box around it. We know what it does. But that system is going to be part of a broader system, a system of systems. Mm-hmm. And ensuring that that's going to play nicely in whatever that future system is going to be is a significant issue.
For instance, a cell phone has a lifetime of 18 months, 36 maybe. Yeah. It's not really, it's cutting edge technology as far as the processor and the connectivity. But that's because we know that within 2 years, you're probably ready for another one. A device that sits on a utility pole and it has a little red light when the power's on and a little red light when the power's off, that's supposed to sit on that utility pole for 15 or 20 years. It's a whole different environment. It's out in the weather. It needs connectivity. It needs temperature resistance. It needs ruggedness. It needs a whole different class of internal connectivity. It also, again, when you put 100 of those out on a pole, it's no problem to gather that data. When you put 10,000 of those out on poles, gathering and monitoring and consuming that data and creating useful business information from that data requires more and more back-end horsepower, more and more back-end storage, a larger pipe to gather the data on your however often you pull it, and good strategies for maintaining all of that in a long-term scenario.
And that's how the whole DNA fits in, right?
There you go.
It clearly does. An example of that, is interestingly enough, is imagine an earthquake alert system. And so we know in Napa Valley they had 10-second notice before the earthquake hit. Well, if that was tied to schools, businesses, hospitals, notify hospitals something bad's going to happen, tied to transit and trains so the trains came to a stop, tied to the electrical poles so the electricity was turning off where appropriate, or data centers where generators were automatically going on to cover the blip. That's what you have to plan for down the road as these start to get smarter.
So here at the Wireless Center, again, we're a device-centric facility, and we've kind of have been, but since so many of our customers are developing Internet of Things devices, that we get engaged now more and more in the entire solutions. I call it the vertical approach to the solution issue. And that has brought about the expansion of the commercialization center here, that we not only have hardware providers or design teams here, but we also have Brightwolf in our commercialization center, because every one of our customers could benefit from a company like Brightwolf, and a lot of the relationships are being grown here between Brightwolf and several of our partners and our customers because of the need for the sophistication of managing data and designing data. The other thing, when you talk about when you have 10,000 devices on a pole and they go down, the only way to bring those back up if they're smart devices and it's been properly designed to bring it back up. And if you don't think about that ahead of time, both from the hardware and the software and from the network side, you obviously struggle, and that becomes a terrible experience for the customer and for the company. So, Mark, you may want to chat about that for a second?
Sure. So there's all kinds of reasons those devices might go down. The carrier may experience a loss of connectivity. There may be a network issue of some sort between the carrier and the company connecting the data. So, of course, being able to troubleshoot and have good information coming back from the field about those devices, some sort of management console, is critical in determining where that failure is. When you deploy a solution of that kind of complexity, you expect a higher level of service from all of the solution partners. So you're probably going to have a 24/7 support number into your application vendor. You're certainly going to have, with that level of complexity, direct tier 2 support into Verizon, for instance, your carrier. You're going to have, if you've deployed something like off-the-shelf modems in your solution, you're going to know engineers in that company. So as you scale up your solution, and as that solution becomes more, for instance, a part of critical infrastructure in the terms of a device that's on a pole monitoring the electric grid, all of those are designed with a higher level of reliability, and each of those solution providers is going to offer a higher level of service to be able to keep those devices up and running. Of course, Verizon, for instance, we have the ability to bring in ways to augment our network with portable cell towers, portable switches, and ways to recover the network in the event of a major catastrophe. Much like the power companies, they'll stage equipment outside the disaster area ready to bring it in as soon as the situation's clear. So from a network standpoint, we definitely realize that we are no longer a convenience, but absolutely part of a business-critical utility. So that's part of our internal DNA at Verizon Wireless is having the best reliability that we can offer.
We're almost out of time. I guess we're just about out of time. But one thing we didn't talk about, and this is not unusual for a lot of internet thing companies not thinking about, but provisioning that device remotely. So either putting the first time device in for the first time, you don't necessarily want to have a technician to do it, but somebody in the field that maybe the user, whatever that may be able to put the new device in, and if it's, and it can be provisioned easily, it's a much better experience. And if it can be replaced when it goes down, because there's a spare sitting around, and the user can replace that. How important is that to the?
Well, imagine you are getting a new cable box from the cable company. You, as the end user, need to be able to plug in about three wires correctly. Power, the big round wire and the big round hole, and one of the things that connects to your TV. So essentially, if you can design your Internet of Things application with that level of connectivity in mind, the device is going to come up, it's going to know its serial number, it's going to phone home, and home is going to know how to remotely provision it, and home is going to know how to change it if it needs to. You know, that's the kind of forethought that you want to design into your solution when you're looking at rolling out something where you're going to have hundreds or thousands of devices in the field that you need to be able to remotely deploy and manage.
Yeah, having the automatic updates on the box, right? So you get more channels more effectively with less drop.
Right, and the user doesn't interact with it. It just kind of comes up and takes care of itself. When the home mothership says it's time for your update, it gets your update. That's exactly what the kind of logic that needs to be built into your solution.
And to that point, we may see strange bedfellows. People who have a need to populate the edge, if you will, with new devices but don't have the infrastructure to do that may partner with somebody such as a Verizon perhaps. Perhaps Verizon distributes at their store is where people go to get the devices versus being shipped direct to them. But there's lots of companies that will start to fill into this space and augment their services by leveraging
It's all about that intelligent plumbing, right?
Yeah,
you know, right, right, right. And we absolutely have partners that will do exactly what you're talking about, be able to keep hot spares that have your configuration template on it. So a broken device is cross-shipped that's already pre-configured. You take the SIM card out of one and drop it in another, and you're up and ready to go without any downtime. So definitely there are partners out there that offer those types of services to be able to keep the physical logistical parts of your Internet of Things network going.
Well, it's time for us to wrap up the show, and I really want to thank you guys for helping me to host my first show. We're going to go around the room and talk about how people who are listening to the show can get in touch with each of the companies here. So, Dave, you could tell us a little bit about best way to access you personally or your company, Brightwolf.
Sure. If you want to call me, my phone number is 469-628-4676. My email is relatively simple, david@brightwolf.com, or feel free to go to our website, brightwolf.com. Thank you.
Mark?
So we've got a couple of different ways that you can contact us. Of course, as a large company, I need to give you our media contact, which is Karen Schultz. You could reach her at 864-987-2006. but also, of course, Verizon Wireless, we've got a number of websites that are out there that can help you. We've got solutionfinder.verizonwireless.com can give you an idea of some of the partners that are already out there that have built these types of Internet of Things solutions. And if you are a partner that's looking to be able to roll out a device in Verizon Wireless, contact your local Verizon business representative. We've got the Verizon Partner Program where we are eagerly searching for you to help bring your business on and mobilize your existing device. So,
Jerry, what's the best way to reach the Wireless Center?
Yeah, the best way is to go to our website. It's www.wirelesscenter.org.
We also have a Twitter site, so it's WRC_NC that you can reach us at, and I guess we're tweeting as we speak. Okay. Reed will have to give us the location for the information on that. Before Reed tells us how to get in contact with BRX, Business Radio X, I want to remind everything that we're doing a Riot, which is a Raleigh Internet of Things meetup at the HQ Raleigh on 9:30, which is September 30th, starting at 6 o'clock. We also are kind of twisting the name a little bit from Raleigh Internet of Things to the rectangle Internet of Things, since Wake Forest doesn't exactly belong within the triangle. So that's my goofy little joke that people get to hear every so often. But Wake Forest is obviously very engaged with the entire community, and we want to continue to have this conversation with anybody who's interested about learning more about Internet of Things down at HQ Raleigh on 9:30, starting at 6 o'clock. And we have several speakers there from Verizon, IBM, Device Solutions, and Connected Development. And they are Connected Development and Device Solutions have been on a show before, and they actually do a lot of design works on this. And Bright Wolf will be in attendance as well, so you can chat with them and meet them in person. So now signing off for the Business Radio X.
Yeah, hey, Larry, this is Reed. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find our Twitter account. It's BRXCapRaleigh. That's BRXCAP and the word Raleigh. And we should have this show up later today. You can come back and listen to it. And we look forward to having the traffic and everybody commenting. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, so thank you, Larry. Thanks, everybody, for coming into the studio today. And we will see you guys next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.